Welcome to the Florida Roundup. It's the statewide edition this hour. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. We cannot let this pass without making something happen. That's what Florida Governor Rick Scott told CNN the day after a mass shooting killed 17 people at a public high school in Broward County.
Everything's on the table. All right. I'm going to look at every way that we can make sure our kids are safe.
Now, this came from a Republican governor who received an A-plus rating by the National Rifle Association during the 2014 gubernatorial race. And this week, the governor opened the door to a gun debate in the state legislature.
We're going to have a real conversation about two things. How do we make sure when a parent is ready to send their child to school that in Florida, that parent knows that child is going to be safe? Number two, how do we make sure that individuals with mental illness do not touch a gun?
Scott may run for the U.S. Senate this fall, and if he does, he'll face Democrat Bill Nelson. Nelson took to the Senate floor Thursday.
These tragedies have led so many of us to come right here to this floor and to beg our colleagues to take common sense actions that we all know will help protect our children and our fellow citizens from these kind of tragedies. And we get nowhere. So when is enough going to be enough?
Now, as Democrats in Washington and Tallahassee call for restricting gun access, Republican Senator Marco Rubio also took to the Senate floor, and he said most of the gun proposals that have been offered would not have prevented the Parkland shooting.
If someone decides that they are going to take it upon themselves to kill people, whether it's a political assassination of one person or the mass killing of many, if one person decides to do it and they're committed to that task, it is a very difficult thing to stop.
The Republican senator went on to say it's wrong to suggest, though, there's nothing that can be done. Now, during the 2016 election, Rubio received the third most money from the National Rifle Association Political Action Committee, members, employees, or families. That, according to the Center for Responsive Politics.
We're going to spend the entire hour on the Florida Roundup today discussing the school shootings in Parkland, and we welcome your calls. The number to join the show, 305-995-1800. With us for the hour today, former Florida Republican Congressman David Jolly. Congressman, it's so good to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us. And I have to begin by saying to you, you caused quite a stir the other night when you went on CNN and said you don't believe your political party, the Republicans, will ever do anything on gun control. You said to get any action going, you have to go to the Democrats and you have to get the Democrats to work with law enforcement on this. Extraordinary remarks from you, sir, on this issue.
This is a human moment, as every mass casualty event is. And my preference as a Republican who's been a Republican for over 20 years is that Republicans would lead on this issue. But history has proven that Republicans won't. Some of it is based simply in ideology, and an ideology that we have to respect among a diverse constituency. But other biases are based in both the influence of outside groups as well as just raw politics. And so my point was, I would hope Republicans would lead, but I know they won't. And so if the notion of responsible firearm control measures is part of your political ideology, then the constituency you look to in politics today has to be Democrats who are at least speaking to the issue in a measured way.
Congressman, it's Tom Hudson. Let me ask you about the second part of that, the influence of politics. Public polling has shown American support for some kind of movement toward gun restrictions, and yet there obviously hasn't been any under Republican control in Congress. How do you put those two pieces together, the influence of politics in this?
Yes, so this is interesting because it actually gets a little stale when we get into the political science of it. Here's what I mean by that. It goes to a closed primary system and gerrymandered districts where representatives in Congress answer to only their base constituencies. And if they if they seek to moderate or at least work on these consensus solutions, they get punished in a closed primary system where for Republicans only the most conservative voters vote and for Democrats only the most progressive voters vote. But in the raw politics of it as well, and it's very important, and it's a hard conversation to have, and I know this will inflame a lot of political passions. The politics happens on both sides of the aisle, and here's what I mean by that. We know in most situations, Republicans push back on gun control measures, and it is both ideology and politics. But I do want to point to after Vegas. The Senate had a budget bill up. It was an open process. Chuck Schumer told his Democratic caucus, I don't want any gun votes. I don't want any gun amendments. And the reason why is Democrats are facing very hard races in Missouri and the Dakotas and in West Virginia, where Democratic senators hold states that Trump won by 30 or 40 points. And it is important, whatever your party, whatever your ideology, to recognize there is a lot of accountability that has to go around. Republicans bear the brunt of it. But the Democrats, at least on Capitol Hill, not your grassroots, but at least on Capitol Hill, are also playing politics with this.
And so you're calling on the Democrats then, David Jolly, to go to the law enforcement community, you've been saying for the last couple of days, which is a conservative
That's
community,
right.
but that one that you say you think would work with the Democrats, particularly in the wake of the last several shootings, one in Sutherland Springs, Texas, the one in Las Vegas that you just mentioned, and now this tragedy in South Florida, on some sensible gun reforms that you think, particularly law enforcement, would be in favor of, such as?
So the opportunity is there based on the inaction of Republicans. And so for Democrats, the challenge is, how do you broaden the constituency, right? The anger of the American people right now who are begging for leadership. How do you bring in independents or crossover Republicans to say, yes, I will follow a Democratic leader towards responsible gun measures? And what I point to is our law enforcement leadership across the country, your major sheriffs, your police chiefs, generally support increased background checks, universal, comprehensive, whether it be a private transfer between family, a commercial transfer, as well as what are we investigating? Because right now, a law enforcement officer will tell you the background check is really only a criminal conviction check. If a husband has been picked up on a spouse abuse allegation, but charges are never filed, and the wife decides for any reason not to file charges and it's never adjudicated, the next time he engages in spousal abuse, it might include a gun, and he kills his spouse. That does not come up in a background check. And so law enforcement says we need stronger background checks. They also want stronger restrictions on assault weapons because they don't want to send the men and women in uniform into a crime scene environment having to face assault weapons. So for either party, there is an opportunity to say we can build a coalition with the law enforcement community that represents the broad interest of the American people. Republicans are not doing that. Republicans are standing in the way of gun reform. Democrats have an opportunity to change the game, triangulate, and outflank the NRA on this issue.
Speaking with former Republican Congressman David Jolly, he's with us from our sister station in Tampa, WUSF. This is the statewide edition of the Florida Roundup. Your phone calls at 305-995-1800 in a moment. Congressman, I want to ask you about two things regarding law enforcement and guns. One is a news story that's been breaking over the past hour or so regarding the FBI. Now, the accused shooter in the Parkland shooting, a 19-year-old Nicholas Cruz, there was a YouTube video that was posted with a comment from a Nicholas Cruz, who spelled his name the same way, that the FBI was alerted to back earlier this year and late last year. They had the local field office in Jackson, Mississippi look at it, and it didn't go any further. What's happened within the last hour is the FBI director has come out and said that under established protocols, the information provided by the caller should have been assessed as a potential threat to life, and it should have been forwarded to the FBI field office. It essentially acknowledges the FBI did not follow its own protocol in this case. As a former congressman, how do you hear that from the chief domestic law enforcement agency?
It's heartbreaking, and I think it angers not just a former member of Congress, every American, but think about the families who are hearing that law enforcement failed in this incident. And I do think what's important as for each one of us, going forward, because this is very hard news to consume, that perhaps there was an opportunity missed. We know two things. We now know law enforcement missed some clear signals, including he was on social media saying, "I want to be a school shooter." That was missed. They missed this tip. We know law enforcement missed it. But we also know this young man should never have been able to buy a gun, even before the FBI tip. And what I mean by that is we know that there had been unusual activities, behaviors. We know he had associated with some extreme groups. We know he engaged in the flaunting of a weapon. We know he had sought mental health counseling. So both are failures in the system, mm-hmm. and each require reform, resources, accountability. And the FBI failure reminds us that this is a complex problem. We need to address it in many different ways. And an analogy is this. A lot of times Republicans say it's a mental health problem, and that is true. But even if you accept it's a mental health problem, why is it that somebody with a mental health condition is able to purchase a firearm? We're not going to solve it simply by more mental health counseling. We need that. We need more resources. We also have to recognize there's a failure in the transaction of firearms that does not consider mental health.
And how about the fact that the types of restrictions you're talking about, they actually have strong bipartisan support?
They do. Look, and this is a real challenge for us as a society on the mental health issue. We want people in need of care to seek it out, and we don't want to put any barriers up. And for a long time, the Republican argument against using mental health records in a background check has been to protect the privacy of an individual. At some point, we have to make a value judgment, and I don't know where each listener might fall. We have to make a value judgment. Is it worth including mental health records in a background check for the purchase of a firearm? This is one that I have evolved on. Initially, I thought, no, let's protect that doctor-patient relationship. But when we see mass casualties, I think it is something that I feel comfortable suggesting. If you are going to engage in a regulated transaction of purchasing a firearm, you have to open yourself up to a background check that we believe protects society.
Congressman, let me ask you one other question regarding politics and law enforcement. The sheriff in Broward County, Scott Israel, has said, quote, "If you're an elected official and you want to keep things the way they are, if you want to keep gun laws as they are now, you will not get reelected in Broward County." Pretty strong words from a county that is certainly deep blue Democrat in a purple state.
Coming from a law enforcement officer, and what it means is this: Rick Scott, Marco Rubio, other Republicans in the state of Florida are missing the connection here with their constituencies and the people they're asked to represent. Nobody is asking, some may, but the broad constituency is not asking to abandon the Second Amendment. They're asking to protect the Second Amendment while providing responsible restrictions on transactions and purchases. That mother who cried out to Donald Trump, "Please do something," she's not asking for open carry and guns in classrooms. She's not asking for more lax gun rules. She's asking for stricter gun rules. And my fear is what's going to come out of this. Donald Trump is going to host governors and major mayors at the White House. Our elected Republicans in Tallahassee are all going to focus on one issue. How do we harden schools? How do we create more security in schools? How do we make secure schools safe? That's an important conversation, but they are going to do it without actually addressing how are guns getting in the hands of this young man? And they're going to ignore the latter and focus on the former, and they won't answer the concerns of this Broward sheriff.
And before we go to the calls, one more question for you, David Jolly. Isn't that because the political calculation up until this point has always been people that are supporters of gun rights tend to be single-issue voters? They turn out and vote. People that are mobilized to vote the other way on this issue, they're not. In other words, the worm hasn't turned on this issue in the way that I think you're talking about. Do you sense a sea change on this issue enough so that enough voters might turn out motivated because they want real change, real policy change on this issue?
I think there's an opportunity for those who care about this issue to seize the energy and win back some seats, if you will, from those who stand in the way. We know that Republicans who are refuse to compromise are protected by closed primaries and gerrymandering. We absolutely know that. And so that is going to be a real challenge that has to be addressed. It is important to also think, when you think of the NRA and their influence, there are two elements. There is the inside the beltway money influence, but it does represent a constituency throughout the state of Florida that does deserve to be represented. Their convictions on the Second Amendment deserve to be represented. And what has happened is most Republican officials simply insulate themselves with that constituency and don't think outside of it because they're protected in these rigged election systems.
All right. All right. And let's go to your calls. Lots of calls from all over the state as we discuss the Parkland school shootings here on the Florida Roundup. 305-995-1800. Let's begin now with Otis in Jacksonville. Hi, Otis. You're on the air. Good morning, or good afternoon, rather. Hi, Otis. Go ahead.
Hi there. I have a question and a statement. The NRA and their supporters always talk about when a shooting happened, they always say it's someone mental capacity that allowed them to do the shooting. Here's what I say. We need to just tell the NRA and their supporters this one question. Felons cannot buy weapons. Why? Because we created a law to say they can't do it. We are not, we went in, nothing in the Second Amendment say that a felon cannot buy a weapon, but we as lawmakers put that in. We can put restrictions on guns being provided to people that are 18 years old, and even the amount of guns they have. We have to get away from allowing them to say guns, we are trying to take away a person's Second Amendment rights. We've already did it by not allowing felons to have a weapon, so therefore we should be able to create any law that's going to make the American people safe.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Otis. There's a long list of gun control measures that enjoy majority support, David Jolly, banning the sale of assault-style weapons, high-capacity magazines, prohibit the modifications of bump stocks that allow the faster rates of fire, institute universal background checks, you talked about that, barring gun sales to violent criminals, creating a centralized record of gun purchases, requiring all gun owners to be licensed, we're all licensed to drive. These all enjoy majority support, bipartisan support.
They do, and I love that call from Otis. It's a great way to kick off the calls because of this. A lot of times people confuse constitutional rights with absolute rights, and the Second Amendment is a constitutional right, I believe, and I believe it does translate from the founders to where we are today, but not in an unregulated fashion. Consider your very important First Amendment protections, from speech to press to assembly. Those are regulated, right? That classic thing you learn as a kid, you can't yell fire in a movie theater. They are constitutional rights, but they are not absolute rights. We can protect the Second Amendment while implementing the measures you just mentioned. And that is the opportunity that Washington's missing. And it is important that we look at both parties on this. Republicans historically stand in the way, but what I would offer to Democrats is work for incremental change. We don't have the votes for an assault weapons ban, but we do have the votes for dramatically increased restrictions on a ban. We do have the votes, if we can position it correctly, for greater background checks. Let's work on those things.
That is Florida Republican, former Florida Republican Congressman David Jolly with us from Tampa. Congressman, stick with us. We've got a lot more to talk about, including some legislative efforts that are underway already in Tallahassee and certainly what could be taking shape in the week ahead as lawmakers will go back to the Capitol and get back to work during session. It is the Florida Roundup Statewide Edition.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Thanks again for listening this week. The day after the worst mass shooting at a high school in America happened in South Florida, a Senate committee put on hold a bill that would allow some concealed weapons license applications in Florida to be okayed with incomplete background checks. Now, the bill would require the state to issue a concealed weapons license if the state does not complete the background check within 3 months and there's no other problem.
Now, this was just one of the gun-related bills that was moving in Tallahassee during the legislative session that's about halfway done right now. But unlike the shooting 13 months ago that happened at the Fort Lauderdale Airport or the Pulse nightclub massacre in Orlando, the Stoneman Douglas High School mass shooting happened during the Florida legislative session. And in the wake of the shooting at the high school, legislative leaders are now pledging more funding for mental health. Senate President-designate Bill Galvano, a Bradenton Republican, says there's enough support in the Senate to add $100 million to the budget for mental health screening, counseling, and training. House Speaker-designate Jose Oliva, a Republican whose district covers part of Miami-Dade, well, he says that's where the money should go before we talk about gun restrictions.
You don't take cars off the road because someone got drunk, used one, and killed someone. You don't take a car off the road because someone rented a U-Haul and ran it into some people in New York City. We have to continue as a society to put a much greater focus on the prevention, not by eliminating guns, because you can't eliminate renting U-Haul trucks. What you have to figure out is, what is the underlying problem? And that's obviously, it's a condition of mental illness.
How Florida treats mental health and how Florida treats guns. Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel, meantime, who's leading the investigation into the Parkland shooting, has his own ideas for a new law.
Give police the power, if they see something on social media, if they see graphic pictures of rifles and blood and gore and guns and bombs, horrific language, if they see a person talking about, I want to grow up to be a serial killer, we need to have the power to take that person and bring them before mental health professionals at that particular time involuntarily and have them examined.
How about that? An involuntary examination for violence on social media. You can join our conversation here, 305-995-1800 across the Sunshine State. David Jolly, former Republican congressman, is still with us from our sister station in Tampa. Beth Kassab is along with us now, Orlando Sentinel reporter, who had a lot of coverage, certainly, during the Pulse nightclub shooting several years ago now. Beth, I'm just curious, like, as Parkland and South Florida now has experienced this, continuing the grieving, of course, but in this policy discussion that these awful tragedies bring forth, what is sounding familiar to you in this gun and mental health debate and conversation that you experienced after the Pulse nightclub shooting?
You know, so much of this is all too familiar to so many of us in our newsroom and throughout the Central Florida community. You know, the Pulse massacre, which at the time was the deadliest mass shooting in modern history in the United States, you know, that sparked a lot of these conversations that we're now seeing play out in South Florida. You know, I think one point that is a good one to make is that Christine Linenen, who is the mother of one of the men who died in the Pulse nightclub, I've interviewed her a number of times since her son Drew was killed, and I noticed on Wednesday afternoon she posted a Valentine's message to her son, and it was around, you know, 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon on Wednesday. And it was a very loving message. And within just a few hours, she was posting about what happened in Parkland and was again reiterating what so many of the Pulse families have said over these last almost 18 months now is, you know, for some of these policy changes that you all are talking about.
You've also written, Beth, about the fact that since the Pulse shooting, legislatively in Florida, the response to these mass shooter incidents has been, let's say, anemic at best. This is a state that, and we're in the middle of a state legislative session.
Right.
Let's talk about the response in Tallahassee as we speak to the South Florida tragedy. Your thoughts about that?
Right. So we are seeing legislators and the governor speak out. It seems to me like there's a little bit stronger language being used this time around. And I think I've heard some people observe that because this is during the legislative session, perhaps it's getting some more attention. But we went through many of these motions after the Pulse shooting. And there hasn't been really anything in the way of tangible change. The families who lived through Pulse, I'm sure can very much relate to what the families in Parkland are going through right now.
Yeah, and it's the Florida Roundup as we talk about the school shootings in Parkland, Florida. 305-995-1800, our guests for the full hour now, former Florida Congressman David Jolly and Beth Kassab of the Orlando Sentinel. You know, watching the kids from that high school talk on national television so eloquently about what they experienced and what they are now demanding the adults do about this problem and their thoughts on social media, I thought was quite moving. John is in Miami. He's on the line with some thoughts about what the kids had to say. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you? Well, when I was driving my daughter to school in middle school, she says, oh, I got to wear black today for gun control. And that to me, that said that something is different. The fact that they're organizing, that they are, they feel that this is their issue. I got to tell you, whether you're a Democrat family or a Republican family or independent, you're going to start hearing from your kids, whether they be in elementary, middle, high school, or college. And that's a message that you're going to have to address. They are not going to back down this time. I think this is different.
Thanks, John. You know, let me just jump in, David Jolly, because these high school kids were sharing videos of this with their peers all over the country and even all over the world. The images were so horrifying and powerful. And these high school seniors were going on television and so articulately demanding action from their parents and from Congress. This young generation has known nothing but these active shooter drills. What do you think about his perspective? Do you think John's right? Will this next generation finally be the one that might actually be able to see some sort of resolution to this issue in America?
I think we hope so, right? The fact that schools in the United States in 2018 are one of the more dangerous environments in which families go suggests that we have to see the change. And I love the comment from the caller that this one seems different. It does seem different. You know, they each seem different, and we hope for change. But the element that is different in this one, I think, is the fact that you have high schoolers so articulate, so willing to face the entire country and demand change, to show the anger. And this goes back to, you know, the conversation we were having about what's going to happen in Tallahassee, what's going to happen in Washington. There may be more mental health funding. There may be a hardening of schools. But what the students are saying is fix the gun issue. Let's do all three of those. And the voices of the students are the ones that can lead that change. I think for the adults and for those of us who engage in media and public affairs, it's about continuing a platform that allows these students' voices to be sustained until we see the change.
Beth Kassab with the Orlando Sentinel, as you think back through the environment immediately after the Pulse nightclub shooting and then that legislative session that followed months after that, do you feel it's different this time? And if so, what is it that's different?
You know, I hate to be a cynic, but we have been through this before, and there have been moments in time after Pulse, after Las Vegas, after Newtown, where people said, I think it's different this time, I sense a change, and then that hasn't happened. So as I have been interviewing people, especially over the last couple of days, parents and teachers, you know, people want to believe that there is a change, and they want to be shown that is happening. But I think we can only say that time will tell, because I think we've been down this road before and that hasn't actually happened.
Yeah.
You know, I do see some, I have seen here in Central Florida, you know, we're not that far from where the shooting took place. And there have been quite a few calls here locally for change. People saying, if gun laws are not going to change, then why are our courthouses and jailhouses more secure than our schools? Why don't we invest in hardening the campuses? Maybe that's not everyone's first choice in terms of aesthetics, but maybe that is becoming the first choice in terms of safety. And those are some calls that I haven't seen, maybe in terms of the volume of them and the number of people I'm talking to. You know, that strike me as a little bit new after this shooting. I think it's hit obviously very close to home, and people are saying at this point, maybe it is up to local officials, local school boards to do something to improve safety at schools.
Beth Kassab with us from the Orlando Sentinel, former Republican Florida Congressman David Jolly, and your phone calls as well, 305-995-1800. We are going to go to Broward County, and on line 10, Ruth has been holding on patiently. Ruth, you are on the radio. Thank you.
Hi. I just had a couple of comments. I am a licensed mental health professional here in Broward County. I am counseling a family who has lost a son in the shooting. And, you know, if we can't change these gun laws, you know, maybe there's another way. You know, I'm a big believer in passing information down the line. You know, I mean, if somebody comes in, you know, I've had two children come in who, you know, the schools have contacted me literally saying, I'm afraid of this kid. We don't want this kid to come back into the school. And so if I knew that I had a phone number to call, a contact number to pass this information along that this kid might be a danger, you know, to some, you know, in a school environment, I believe that would be a huge help in a number of these cases.
Are you saying, mm-hmm. Ruth, that you are unaware of any kind of reporting procedure within a school district for a counselor like yourself to report concern about the safety of a child, a student, or the safety of others because of another student?
Well, I always contact the school counselors, but I mean, where does it go from there? You know, I mean, it's kind of like all of us are on a certain level. We can't jump to the next level.
And not only that, it's been reported over the last days that Florida schools are extremely underfunded in the number of counselors they have on site. They don't have enough counselors to deal with the overwhelming demand of the number of troubled kids that need help and support and guidance. They're simply completely understaffed. So when we talk about the need to harden the schools and provide better security, obviously that's the pressing need. But David Jolly, another area that's underfunded, as Ruth is pointing out, is the kids need emotional and psychological support, and that staffing simply isn't there. It's just not there in the adequate amount. The numbers aren't there.
That's right, and that's a result of political decisions in Tallahassee to underfund critical counseling services, and we know that. And so hopefully, if there is good policy that comes out of this, it will include additional resources. And I think to Beth's point, we will see perhaps some movement in that direction in Tallahassee. And that is a good thing, and we should encourage it, and we should support it. But not to build on the cynicism, we are 48 hours from the event.
Yeah.
And I can't point to one statewide Republican official in the state of Florida who has actually been willing to talk about guns.
And this is this is the Florida Roundup statewide edition from Florida Public Radio. Let's go now to Vincent. He is in Parkland. Vincent, you're in Parkland.
Yes, I am. Comments. You know, I've been a Republican my whole life. If the Republicans can't vote to change, to make some sensible gun laws, I can change my vote and not vote Republican again. It's made me sick. You know, I watch Fox, and I turned it on the other day, and I listened to some of the comments about it's not, you know, guns aren't responsible, people are responsible. It's about mental illness. I mean, I had to change the channel. You know, maybe because they hit so close to home. You know, my son went to Douglas. My daughter is in 7 years old. It took me 3 hours to get out of her elementary school. She was on lockdown. There was FBI SWAT teams in her lockdown area, walk in the hallways. She wet herself.
I'm so sorry.
I mean, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm watching. I'm on an outfit in Parkland called Neighbors. And usually, it's, you know, if I lost my dog, the fountain's not working. But an app came over, so, you know, somebody was looking for their daughter because they haven't heard from her. Has anybody heard from my daughter? It broke my heart. She had been killed.
You're a Republican, but you're angry. You want your party to just try to come to the table on this.
I'm so tired of you know, the Second Amendment. What about the right to pursuit of happiness? Okay, what about that right that's in the Constitution? You know, I mean, you know, there is no reason why a 19-year-old should be able to buy an assault rifle. He can't buy a glass of beer, but he can buy an assault rifle. That makes no sense. That's not a sensible rule.
Vincent,
that's not a sensible.
We're a little bit short on time, but on the line also is David Jolly, a former congressman from Florida, Republican, who I think you are putting voice to a lot, Congressman Jolly, of what you're talking about.
I could not have said that better myself, and frankly, the nation needs to hear what we just heard from the caller, which is if you are a Republican and your Republican elected officials are not going to change their votes on reasonable gun control measures, then you as a voter should change yours. And that's what comes out of this tragedy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm sorry if I sound emotional, but I moved to Parkland because it was such a great neighborhood. Parkland is a dream neighborhood. It's like a Steven Spielberg neighborhood. I mean, you know, and I still can't believe this actually happened to Parkland. Yeah. I'm in shock.
Your shock and anguish and anger are completely understood.
I'm sorry if I sound so animated.
Believe me, you know, Vincent, we're all feeling the same anguish, and we don't even live where it happened. So thank you for calling. And we're going to keep continuing this discussion in just a moment here with the congressman and Beth Kessup of the Orlando Sentinel here on the Florida Roundup. You're listening to us with Florida Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. It's the statewide edition this hour. Thank you for listening to Public Radio in the Sunshine State. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. As we continue our special coverage for the entire hour today into the aftermath of the deadly high school shooting in Parkland, Florida, it's 305-995-1800 to join the Florida Roundup as we continue our conversation with former Florida Congressman David Jolly, Republican, of the Tampa, St. Petersburg area, and the Orlando Sentinel's Beth Kessup. And Beth, let's talk for a minute about the fact that as you've been writing for the Sentinel, the FBI did a report on active shooter situations, and they've increased in recent years. The danger from these situations is growing, according to the data we have, right?
That's right. So this report, I believe that came out in 2014, did show an increase in mass shootings. Now, you'll see mass shootings reported in different ways. Oftentimes, it's a situation in which there is an active shooter and at least, you know, two or more people are killed, but there are other standards. So these incidents have increased. A lot of people are wondering why. And, you know, a lot of the talk centers around these very policy discussions that you all are talking about that are highly politicized. But they are discussions that people need to have. And in many cases, the shooters have been able to obtain their weapons legally. That was the case just this week in Parkland, and that was the case here in Orlando when the shooter obtained his weapons legally as well.
305-995-1800. Lots of good phone calls, hearing perspective from throughout the Sunshine State. We'll go to Jacksonville next on line 11. Perry, thank you for your patience. Your thoughts on this?
Well, thanks for taking my call. This really is a tough time for all of us. But I was thinking, as far as the psychologists go and be able to report patients that may have a, you know, possibility of hurting someone. Ethically, they're bound to do this. And the other therapist's call about not knowing who to report to was problematic. But what I'm thinking is that the NRA seems to have the Congress locked up. And I don't trust the legislature to really deal with this because they've been just stymied. But I think our hopes are in an executive branch of either a state or the nation to create some kind of administrative act to curtail, you know, the laxity in ownership, maybe an assault ban rifle, assault rifle ban. And the thing is interesting was that when we had the assault ban rifle, assault ban for 20 years after Clinton, it was never challenged in the Supreme Court that I remember. The NRA never took it to the Supreme Court. I think at some point in time the NRA may, and when they do, we'll let our judicial system settle this question for last.
Perry, appreciate that. I want to put that to Congressman Jolly. We began our conversation, Congressman, and you talked about kind of three things within Republicans that have kind of stymied any kind of gun regulation. Ideology, you spoke about, the influence of politics, you spoke about, and I will paraphrase here, but the influence of money. What about Perry's position in terms of the National Rifle Association, its use of Political Action Committee money, and its use of being able to essentially activate hundreds of thousands of voters?
So very similar to other large organizations. As a member of Congress, you know if you're taking a vote adverse to their interest, that the outside money will not be there for your next reelection. And that's just the reality. And you see that impact a lot of people. When I was a first-time candidate who had never voted on anything before, the NRA chose to support me, in large part because they didn't like my opponent, but they chose to support me. And there were several measures I voted for and supported that they endorsed. But the moment I started supporting universal background checks and trying to solve the terror watch list, they were no longer there for me. What I have encouraged my former colleagues to do is take a risk. Take a risk to represent your entire constituency. Risk losing your job.
David Jolly, when you do that, what do they say to you privately about this?
You know, look, they're very careful because it would be criminal if they suggested that somehow money is tied to it. But it is well known. It is well known. And my point is to my colleagues is this. Risk losing your job, you'll find your voice and the American people will support you. You know, the Brady campaign to stop gun violence targeted me in 2016. And I was out there trying to solve a post-Pulse nightclub hard terror fly list issue. So I called the Brady campaign and I said, let's sit down and talk. What's your concern? And they said, you haven't co-sponsored our universal background check. And I said, well, I will. And it was a contentious meeting, but we walked away working together. And I say that so that the American people can be encouraged and my colleagues can see a way forward. We can make incremental changes if we're willing to break from the tribalism and just do what's right. The American people will support it.
Let's go to Brett. He's in Jacksonville. He's on the line. Hey, Brett, you're on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you. I just wanted to post back to the comment that Otis made at the beginning of the session here. He asked the question why we can block felons and why we can't seem to block anybody else. And I would like to point to the idea of strict scrutiny, which is a Supreme Court issue that requires that you meet certain conditions if you're going to block an enumerated right. We can block a felon because it meets strict scrutiny. The particular shooter in this case didn't have any crime against him. Who hadn't been involuntarily committed. While he had made some comments that certainly pointed to a problem, nobody had really done anything about it. And so my comment is, what solution does anybody on the board have that they're going to come up with that is going to be able to meet strict scrutiny and is going to give the person due process before we take away the right, and also meet the requirements within Heller versus D.C., McDonald versus Chicago, where the Supreme Court determined.
Yeah, and that's a difficult question, Brett. And that's one I think, David Jolly, that you addressed earlier, that your views on that had evolved because HIPAA guarantees privacy rights for people. But you and Beth, you jump in too. That is a difficult and that's a very important question as we talk about this.
It is on the healthcare issue. It certainly is because of HIPAA. We saw the debate over no fly, no buy, the terror watch list. The breakdown was due process. The caller is exactly right. Anytime the government denies you a constitutionally protected right, it also owes you due process to have that adjudicated. But I would suggest that the caller just gave us the answer, not the problem. We can impose responsible restrictions, provided we provide due process to have them remediated if a U.S. citizen feels they were wrongly denied.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup Statewide Edition from Florida Public Radio. Beth Kassab from the Orlando Sentinel, your thoughts?
Yes, I mean, I think the congressman makes some good points there. I mean, there in Orlando, we saw a lot of discussion in the wake of Pulse, where, as you know, 49 people lost their lives. How did this individual who also showed warning signs, who also had been interviewed by the FBI prior to the shooting, you know, how come it wasn't enough to exclude him from purchasing his weapons? And the argument you often hear is that you risk infringing on the rights of people who should be able to do these things and who have no potential to go out and commit such a heinous crime.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those debates have been had, but it seems as though we are talking ourselves in circles, and there's never a compromise presented. I have never seen a tangible plan to really get around this issue or to really confront it, for that matter. I mean, all we hear about is, well, if you do this, then this could happen.
Right.
But nothing is ever actually tried.
Let's bring in one last call here on the statewide edition of the Florida Roundup, and we go back to Parkland, where Ray has been holding on. Ray, thank you for your time. Your thoughts?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. My thoughts are basically, like I said, you know, my condolences, first of all, to everybody that lost their lives here in Parkland. And, you know, I'm very sorry to hear that. And like I said before, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans, they're both, you know, they're fighting about a situation that cannot be controlled. You know, basically the reason it can't be controlled is because even if say that they pass a law that says, okay, we're going to outlaw guns, all of the AR-15s, the assault-style rifles. What's going to happen is that the criminals are always going to get their hands on these guns, okay? So basically the only people that are going to be turning over their guns are the law-abiding citizen that wants to protect their family or protect themselves. In a case, you know, you go to a restaurant, you know, you're there with your family, somebody comes in to rob the place, they're going to do something to you, you're not going to be able to defend yourself. They're going to be able to do whatever they want. Why? Because the only guns that are going to be turned in are the guns that are registered and people who are law-abiding citizens willing to give up their guns. The criminals are not going to do that. Okay, that's a fact. Okay, so what do we have to do? I think we need to put better training, you know, basically reinforce our schools, put maybe safety rooms in the schools when they build new schools.
And as you, thanks for that call. As you said, David Jolly, that will definitely be a topic of discussion. It might not be the only one, though, to your consternation. David Jolly, former Republican Congressman, Beth Kassab of the Orlando Sentinel, we thank you both so much for being on the show today. Thank you both for being with us.
Thanks
for having
me.
Great to be with you.
That is our show, The Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT in Jacksonville and WLRN in Miami. I'm Melissa Ross, and we thank you for being with us. I'm from up here in Jacksonville. Tom?
In Miami, absolutely. It has been a difficult week in South Florida, but a difficult reminder throughout the state of Florida, Melissa, of the mass shooting,
certainly
in Pulse in Orlando and in Parkland at the Stoneman Douglas High School on the edge of the Everglades. You can find a podcast of this program as well. Don't forget, if you'd like to listen back to our conversation, and the coverage will continue, no doubt, on your local Florida public radio station throughout the next several weeks as we continue coming to terms with what has happened, the human cost, and then, of course, the policy response as lawmakers in Tallahassee go back to work. Jason Zabka is our technical director here in Miami. We had engineering help from Doug Peterson. WLRN's program director is Peter Mertz. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Gina Jordan and Kevin Merschard are our producers.